It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
You're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, and ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special episode as we have our new team that we can announce tonight, that we can unveil for the very first time together, all three of us, for the Sports Objective Podcast, and we're going to go around the table, so to speak. And we have first, everybody knows, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. Kyle, how are you, sir?
Going on, David. Good to be here, as always.
And we also have our new addition, and I'm not talking about Bobby Brown. Back in the day, Bubba probably don't even know who that is. Bubba Rosenbaum, how are you, sir?
Doing well. I appreciate you inviting me to be a part of the podcast, David. I've really enjoyed the podcast that you've put out to this point, and I look forward to being part of the team, talking sports, talking Pirates.
Absolutely. We want to give a special shout-out to both of them. Kyle and Bubba now are special to me behind the scenes, but also they actually are now going to be the co-hosts, so thankfully I don't have to do the show by myself. And I just want to say really quickly, very special shout-out to my buddy Dave Shepard. For those that know, we were going to start the show, the podcast, back in January, and he was a little bit under the weather, and finally, late February, early March, he said, hey, put me on special, the injured list. Unfortunately, we lost Dave, passed away to health issues back in the end of June. So we want to give him, he's going to be a special part of this team forever. He'll just have a bird's eye view in heaven. We're certainly going to miss him. And I guess we can, guys at the party, I guess we can have a special seat for Dave, because he actually was going to make, he was going to make his debut with us that night, and he just couldn't make it. We're definitely going to miss him, and he and I, it was the idea initially to do the show together. He's going to be missed, but we, as they say, the show must go on. And so Kyle from LaGrange Barber, appreciate you very much, bud. And the same thing, Bubba, in the western part of the state, we're glad to have you. So I guess we have the whole state of North Carolina covered, don't we?
Pretty much, from northeastern North Carolina to southern North Carolina to well western North Carolina. We just need a triangle correspondent.
Yeah, that, and we got a whole another show, as they say. We're going to do a special high school preview, and we'll do that another time. But tonight, as always, we're talking about the Pirates, and we've got a very special episode, as always, because it's going to be an interesting dynamic to have three guys, and a lot of fun. I think we've got a lot of great topics to talk about and some fun topics, and we'll go in the mix. Guys, I wanted to bring you in tonight because not only to introduce you guys, but also I want to get, what are your thoughts about right now? I'm going to throw it out of the gate to both of you. What are your thoughts right now about the Pirates going into the season? It's kind of a, some people say it's a dead time, off season. What is your mindset going into the season right now? I'll start with you. We'll start with Bubba, since Bubba's new to the, we're going to, he's the rookie. We're going to put him on the spot right now. What do you think, Bubba?
I think going into this season, coming off 2-3-9 campaigns, I think the biggest thing that we're looking for is just a big improvement, just being competitive. There were so many games last year that we simply were not competitive in. I think there were five games, if I'm not mistaken, where we lost by 30 points or more. And so that's just what we need to see is improvement in the run game, improvement obviously on the defensive side of the ball. Anytime you're giving up 45 points and 550 yards or whatever ended up last year, you're not going to have a chance whatsoever. I think David Blackwell will do a good job. I really like that hire. I'm hopeful as always, and there are a lot of things that need to get fixed, though, if we're going to follow through on Scotty's guarantee to reach a bowl game, that's for sure.
We know what we had to do is, by the way, before we pitch it over to Kyle, for people listening right now that think Kyle's so negative, we had to get a guy that's half full like Bubba. So we've got a good mix of people, don't you think, Kyle?
Absolutely.
I mean, you're always about, you know, everybody. By the way, Bubba, we've got a new sitcom. Everybody loves Kyle.
Everybody hates Kyle.
Hates Kyle?
It's one or the other. Split down the middle, I guess. As far as my expectations for the season, kind of what Bubba said, I expect to see improvement. I expect to see significant improvement. I expected to see improvement last year and didn't see any. Got worse on defense. We have some talented running backs. Will we use them properly this year? I don't think they were used properly last year. Will we see improvement on the offensive line? I mean, that is one position where I do think we were lacking a little bit of talent. So, you know, have they done a good job recruiting and developing offensive linemen the last few years? We got a new offensive line coach who has got a pretty good resume. See what he can do with these guys. I think we're going to have, with breaking in a brand new quarterback, whether it be Reed Herring or Holt Nahlers, we're going to have to be able to run the ball. And then on defense, I mean, our defense was the worst in the nation last year. So it can only get better, but how much better will it get? I mean, we can improve, you know, we can improve 30 spots and we would have the number 95 ranked defense in America. It's not very good, but still we improved 30 spots. We got a long ways to go and a lot of improvement to do if we're going to do what Bubba mentioned, to make Scotty's guarantee of going to a bowl. And that's what I expect. I expect us in year three to be bowling, and anything less than 6-6 will be a disappointing year to me. That's my expectations. 6-6, and if it doesn't happen, I'll be very disappointed.
I will concur with that. I think that for me, looking at what we know right now, and obviously at the end of the season, it's easy to do hindsight, right? I mean, hindsight is 2020. So in December, it's easy to look back and, you know, critique then. But looking forward right now, like we don't know about injuries. We don't know about people being, if God forbid anybody academically ineligible. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. But I think right now there's no way, and I will say this, there's no way that you can argue that the team is not talented, that we don't have good players. The guys coming in, as we've heard about, top 50 recruiting class, top in the American so far. That's a whole other show, but I don't think there's anybody right now that could say that the team is worse off. I think right now, the quarterback play is going to be interesting. I don't think that they're obviously good already about experience, but I think right now, I'm going to say this right ahead of time, I think Reed Herring is going to be much better than what people think. I really do. I think he has a really good grip of the offense. I think that he doesn't have the experience. That's true. Give you that. He's only had, what, one pass last year?
Yeah.
Last year. You look at, for me, there, so you got that issue. Holton, I think, has a knowledge of the game. He has certainly the athleticism. I think
he's got the passion, too. That's something else Holton has, is the passion and love for East Carolina. He genuinely loves East Carolina.
Yeah, he does, and he's been around. He could have gone there. I mean, look at the offers he had. He could have gone just about anywhere. He's the kind of kid that you want, and it's not because I like his dad, Morgan Ehlers, who's tremendous. I really do. I like him a lot personally. He's great professionally, a radio guy, and does PA. He's the guy, for people that don't know, that's where is a touchdown, there's a first down, Pirates, and R. He's been doing that for many years, and probably about, what, 15, 14 years. So I like his dad a lot, and he's been raised right by his mom and dad, and I think that he's got a good head on his shoulders. And I will say this, the one thing that I've been upset about, and I'm not a recruiting guy, but I really believe if he'd gone to Georgia or Alabama or any of the other schools, he's been 4-star. The fact he picked East Carolina and committed so early, all of a sudden he became 3-star.
You're right. One of the offers that really impressed me was after Dan Mullen became the head coach at Florida, he immediately offered Holt Nahlers late. And Dan Mullen's a hell of a evaluator of quarterbacks, and he's a great developer of quarterbacks. So I was really impressed by that offer because I respect Dan Mullen's opinion of quarterbacks.
He was tremendous, and I think Holton right now, I think he's a special player. And I was going to tell you both this right now. It's interesting to me. I haven't heard, I know I've talked to you guys about it. I like this new rule. I want to throw this out before we move on to other topics. By the way, we got so much to talk about. But I like the new rule. I think it's the Holt Nahlers rule, where you can actually now play in 4 games and you can still be redshirted. I think that's a brilliant idea. What do you guys think? We'll start with, we'll go with Kyle this time. Give Bubba a break.
The new rule, it's great. I mean, I don't see any negative to it. Like you said, you take a kid like Holt Nahlers or any other freshman, and you can play them in 4 games without burning a red shirt. So if you have a situation where you want to bring a Holt Nahlers in a special situation because of his athletic ability, or let's say you have an injury and Holton is, you're clearly, let's say it's late in the year and Reed Herring has done a good job starting and has started all year, and Reed gets injured, God forbid, and you're third-string quarterback, you know, isn't up to snuff, and Holton's clearly your number two, and you got 2 games left in the year. Well, you don't have to worry about it. You just bring him in those last 2 games, and let's say the season does go south, and we do have a bad year. Well, you know, if you think Holton may be your starter next year, then you have a chance to bring him in late in the year and see what he can do without you know, burning the pressure here. So, yeah, I don't see any negative to it. Bubba, what about you? Do you see any negative to that rule change where a guy can play four games?
No, I really don't. Say, I think that it's perfect year for the rule to come into effect from our standpoint. That's for sure with our situation at quarterback and Reed Herring and Holt Naylor. I mean, you pretty much spelled out all the scenarios, and I think we should be truly benefiting from that rule for sure.
I think for us right now, the old rule of when people used to say that if you play two quarterbacks, you know, it's like you don't have one. I think for us right now, I think that the three quarterbacks we have right now in the stable, so to speak, I think are all three talented. And I hope that we can use a thing of Fetty. I think there's some stuff that we could do with him. And I know he wants to play quarterback really bad, but I'd love to see some different packages or things we could use, like Coach Montgomery's done at Duke when they had Cirk. Maybe you could, for both Holton Ahlers and Fetty. I think one thing that comes to mind, you have to be careful with Reed Herring, too, is that even though he has a lot of experience of knowledge, I should say, of the offense, you throw him out there, he's only completed, what, one pass in last year? I mean, you know, you got to be careful of putting so much expectations on him. And also, there's a ton of Pirates right now, and I think Holton Ahlers is tremendous. Don't get me wrong when I say this, but I think there's a lot of people that are putting a ton of pressure on Holton right now, and I haven't talked to Morgan obviously about it or anything like that. I mean, it's his son, you know, but I think that there is a lot of pressure on Holton that's unnecessary when he's just literally, what, 18 years old, true freshman at the, I mean, even though he has a great skill set, you still got to give him time to make the transition from high school to college.
I think it's Reed's job to lose, and people need to get behind Reed and support Reed Herring. And to your point about bringing in Holton and Fetty, if you know, in certain situations coming up with some offensive schemes just for them. You know, I agree with you, but if Reed comes out and lights things up and he's like a Shane Carden was his first year in 2012, but as a starting, leave Reed in. Leave him in and let him do his thing. But as far as Holton and the pressure, I agree with you. I think a lot of people are putting way too much on him. But I also think he puts it on himself. You watch the video where on the your favorite pirate memories that ECUPirates.com is doing, or excuse me, ECU Athletics is doing, and posted on Facebook. They had Holton talk about his favorite pirate memories growing up as an East Carolina fan. And he talked about winning championships and he taking it for granted, watching us win the conference USA championship as a kid, and said he wouldn't take it for granted anymore. And that's why he came to East Carolina, to bring that back here, and saying that's what we deserve. And so he puts that pressure on himself too, because he believes we should be winning and he's passionate about it. And just think about, you know, growing up, a lot of these kids that come to East Carolina, you know, they don't grow up as Pirate fans. And just think about if, you know, I grew up an East Carolina fan. You became an East Carolina fan when you were a teenager, David. I'm not sure, Bubba, when you became an East Carolina fan. But just think about
when
you were born a Pirate. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've been a Pirate from birth, that's for sure.
There you go. So just think about if you had the opportunity to be the starting quarterback at East Carolina and you were, you know, a highly recruited quarterback coming out of high school, you would be, you know, chomping at the bit. It's a different dynamic with him. I think he puts the pressure on himself just as much as anybody else puts it on him. With that said, I would expect Reed to start, and I would expect Reed to probably do pretty well. I'm kind of like you, David. Reed's got a big arm. He's a pretty athletic kid. His big problem coming out of high school was he was too doggone skinny. He's put on some weight. I wouldn't be surprised if Reed does pretty well, actually. One thing I've noticed about Scotty since he's been here is he don't mind taking a quarterback out and putting another one in and playing yo-yo with the quarterback. Probably needs, with Reed being inexperienced, he needs to leave him alone and let him work through his mistakes. And fans need to be patient, too. If Reed is making some mistakes, we don't need to be screaming for Holton after his first interception.
Well, that's what I was getting. Thank you for saying that, because I think right now, I think if Fetty, and I hope he, you know, Kingsley, are you guys hearing rumors of he may transfer if he doesn't get playing time?
As far as Kingsley transferring, I have not heard anything along those lines. In the last I'd seen Stephen Igo from Horse of Colors, who does an excellent job of following things closely. He said that Kingsley was sticking things out as the best he could tell for the time being. just to elaborate a little bit on what Kyle was saying a moment ago, I totally agree with him that if I had to bet who takes the first snap, who's seen the bulk of the snaps against North Carolina A&T, I'd say that it's going to be Reed Herring, but I definitely think Holton will see time in that game and significant snaps as the season moves on. And the scenario and what I envision potentially unfolding is, I think back to, I think it was 2007 maybe, with Tim Tebow and Chris Leak at Florida. And Leak was a clear-cut starter, but then Tebow had his package in short yardage, goal line, et cetera. I could see something like that with maybe Herring being the more polished passer at the time being, or for the time being, Holton Ahlers having that package of his own to take advantage of his skill set as well.
Well, here's another thing. For that already out of it, just coming in as a true freshman.
Yes, I think his maturity, from everything I can tell, everything I've heard, I'm certainly able to handle that and potentially more.
I hope so. I mean, that'd be great if we could have that situation. If Reed was successful, plus Holton was able to come in and do some Tebow type stuff, that'd be great.
Well, let's be honest here, and I'm just going to be blunt. I'm going to be doing my Kyle right now. This is the best quarterback situation, I'm not hyping it up, believe it or not, since 2014. I mean, you look at 2015 was an absolute disaster with Ben Kirk going down right before the season. I mean, who would have ever – that was the worst-case scenario we could ever dream of, and it cost Ruffin McNeil's job. And then 2016, we think that we're going to be great with the Philip Nelson and Gardner Minshew. And then last year we had Gardner Minshew and Thomas Cirk. I mean, basically the last 3 years, we really haven't between – I know Cirk, he was just not healthy. I mean, he was way worse than I ever could have imagined. We haven't had a good quarterback play since 2014.
No, and the 2016 thing, look, I'm going to be honest because you know me. That's Montgomery's fault. Had he handled Ben Kirk better after the spring game and told him it was his job, being he's the one that had 2 years of eligibility left and Nelson only had 1 year, he would have had Ben Kirk as a starting quarterback for 2 years, and he would have had Philip Nelson as a backup as a backup in 2016, and that would have been a hell of a situation to be in. That Ben Kirk and Nelson. He didn't manage it right, and Ben Kirk transferred to Virginia. So, yeah, in terms of a talent situation, absolutely, this is the best quarterback situation we've had since 2014 in terms of talent. We just don't have any experience. That's the problem. Talent, I think Reed Herring, Holton Ahlers are extremely talented, and Nfetti, you know, he's an athlete. So we got talent quarterback. We just no experience.
And that'll come. And you know what? That'll come. The experience issue will come. The only way you can practice, and they can have 2-a-days, and you can have all these workouts and everything. But there's nothing like game speed, right? I mean, the game speed is going to be tremendous compared to what anybody's ever seen so far.
Absolutely.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. It's one thing to get all those practice snaps and even those scrimmages, because a lot of the scrimmages, you know, and quarterback aren't going to be live. Very rarely, if ever, is a quarterback going to be live. They're going to have their gold jersey or whatever on, and coaches are going to go nuts if a defensive player lays a hand on a quarterback. So once those live bullets start flying, then it's a whole new ballgame, no doubt about it. I can certainly speak from experience on that, having played quarterback in high school and small college.
Yeah, you beat me to it, Bubba. I was going to ask you that very thing about what do you think about the quarterback play, and I know you played at the college level in Averett College in Danville. I know that there's something to be said about the quarterback position. That really hurts. That's hurt us the last few years. And I think that's a situation that's going to be improved. I think that having Don Mahoney, as Kyle mentioned, we got a good – I like Geef Wade, but I really like Don Mahoney now at offensive line, and I think that's going to – be an interesting – the interesting position, I think, for me, guys, this year, if you're looking – I'm trying to look at the D-backs are going to be deep this year. I think D-line is the one – the D-line for me is the question mark. What do y'all think?
Yeah, we definitely lack depth on the defensive line, particularly, I think, at the end position. So you got to have a good front seven. If you're struggling up front, then it's not going to matter, really, how good your secondary is. A good front seven can make an average secondary look really good. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of pass rush we can get. I do think Blackwell is a big upgrade at defensive coordinator. I mean, I think that goes without saying. I think almost anybody would have been an upgraded defensive coordinator. We'll see what he can do with what he has to work with. There is some talent there. I think our starting defensive line will be fine. I just think we got some depth issues there.
I would certainly agree with those depth issues. I mean, last year linebacker play was poor, to put it mildly. Not to throw anything toward any of those guys. I know they're giving their best effort, but last year linebacker play definitely left a lot to be desired, and I think Bruce Bivens and some of the others this year can really step in and improve that.
Yeah, a lot of times those linebackers were not lined up properly or put in the right positions to succeed.
And another guy to look out for that I liked what I saw of him last year, he started getting some significant playing time, maybe about a third of the way through the season, is Aaron Ramsor, who's from up in the western part of the state, and yep. Scotty Montgomery's hometown, that area, Shelby.
Yeah, he was one that I was going to mention. He's tremendous. There's a lot of great pieces there. It's going to be interesting to see. I wanted to ask you guys about, as far as the season goes, Bubba, we haven't had you on, so we've been talking about it a lot. I'm going to put you on the spot first. Being rookie again, we're so happy to have you part of the podcast. What do you think about this season? What do you think the expectations? What do you see for as far as record? Do you think we're going bowling? Do you think we're going to be subpar, less than 6 wins? What do you think?
At this point, with everything we've covered, talking about the defense, the way we struggled last year, even if we, like Kyle mentioned, even if we say knock 2 touchdowns off of what we allowed last season and allow right at 30 points a game, is an offense being led by a very inexperienced, essentially no experience, a quarterback with an unproven running game and somewhat questionable offensive line. Is it going to be able to put up that type of production in order to reach 6 wins? I think we'll be improved. I definitely think we'll be improved, but I think we have our work cut out for us. And there are those games that we certainly have to win, like the season opener and then that home game. I think it's the last weekend of September against Old Dominion if we're going to reach 6 wins.
What do you think, Kyle?
In terms of a record for the season, I hate predicting records. I think it's so hard to do. I would say between, based on everything I know and what I've seen, I would say between 2 and 4 wins. I think it's possible to get to 6 wins if everything were to go just right. If the offensive line's improved, if we can run the ball, if we get good quarterback play, we have receivers clearly. If the defense is extremely improved, you know, I think it's possible to get to 6 wins, but it's not very probable. I say 2 to 4. If you put a gun to my head, I'd say 2 to 4 wins.
I was going to ask both of you. That's an interesting one because I wanted to talk about this. I set you guys up nicely because on purpose. I know that Kyle and Bubba, you've seen the odds. First of all, let's talk about the odds for overall wins in Vegas. Wasn't it, Kyle, 3.5 wins?
3.5 wins, yeah. That was the over-under.
You sound so excited about that.
I mean, how can you get excited when the over-under is 3.5 wins? I mean, if you take the over, what does that mean, 4 wins? If you take the under, what does that mean, 3 wins? I mean,
Last year, guys, sorry to interrupt, Kyle, but last year, wasn't it 2.5 wins?
Yes.
When 2.5 wins came out, I was like, well, that's easy money right there. And I didn't necessarily think we were going to be contending for championships or anything, but I thought for sure that we would easily win 3 ball games, and we obviously barely got there. But 3.5, say I'm with Kyle. I don't think I would touch that because we may very well get 4, but I wouldn't be shocked if we didn't.
If you made me, I'd probably take the under, but I'm certainly hoping for the over.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you look at the schedule, we're going to break it down. In fact, we can even do a show. We're going to have I'll give you a little tease for folks listening to the podcast. Next month, we're going to do a pirate preview. So we'll give you I'll tease you a little bit of that. But I will just tell you right now, before we break down every single game, looking at the schedule right now, we've talked about it ad nauseum, but we'll keep talking about it because it's what you do in the off season, so to speak. And you look at the first game, North Carolina A&T. The second game is North Carolina. The third game at Virginia Tech. The fourth game you look at, you're going to be at South Florida with Charlie Strong in a second season. You look at the fifth game, Old Dominion home. That first month is going to be very telling, don't you think? Don't you guys think? For September.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you want to go to a bowl, you've said it a million times, you pretty much have to win 3 games in September. I think it is possible to win two games in September and still get the 6 wins, but not very probable.
Right.
You really need to make your hay in September because October is brutal. Not that September is easy. A&T isn't an easy. It should be. We should look at NCAA&T as an easy win, but unfortunately we can't. North Carolina, I know a lot of people, a lot of our fans are circling that one as a W. I really don't understand why. I believe Coach Fedora is a good coach. He's got a lot of talent coming back. They were very, very unlucky last year with injuries. And they got better as the year went on. And God knows after what we did to them the last two times we played them, they're going to be coming for blood. So it's going to be a tough one for us to get. But, you know, maybe we can do it. Then Virginia Tech and South Florida, that kind of is what it is. You know what's going to happen. And then Old Dominion, Bobby Wilder's a good coach. They were a 5-win team last year. Again, they got a lot coming back. And, you know, they gave us all we wanted in 2013 when we won 10 games. They came in here and gave us a heck of a ball game. So it'll be a war with Old Dominion.
When you look at, for me, when I look at the schedule and you break down October, I mean, Temple is not a – I mean, everybody can say what they want to. Temple is not an easy – that everybody used to be Temple was a game that we thought we could, you know, win. And look at 2014. I mean, 2014 – we should have beat them, and we go up there, and it was probably the worst. I'm sorry. 2014 with Shane Carden. That 2014 game, I'm sorry, I'll get my years right. 2014 was what, a 3-4 turnovers that day? I mean, you would have never, uncharacteristic team. Temple seems to have our number every year. You've got them, you've got Houston at home. I mean, it's just, with the schedule in October, it's just is brutal to say the least.
Right, like you got Houston at home, UCF. We obviously know what UCF did last year, winning, claiming their national championship, but an undefeated season nonetheless, and Mackenzie Milton back, and first-year coach, and Josh Heupel. So they're expected to win the league again, but such a tough schedule. And like I was saying earlier, those games that you have to get, I mean – we've talked about A&T and ODU, but as far as league play, I mean, last year we did beat Cincinnati at home, but in Luke Fickell's second year, and so up there, there are no gimmies, that's for sure. So even though we blew them out at home last year, certainly have our work cut out going up there to Cincinnati, and then we have to go to Tulane, and I know that's what Willie Fritz is a heck of a coach and has them steadily improving, and they of course beat us in overtime in Greenville last year. Those are two that you would think that you're probably going to have to get on the road in order to get the sick, and we definitely have our work cut out if we're going to be going bowling.
And another thing, guys, to mention is we had that UConn game. Remember the UConn game? It was, I mean, that could have, if we had a little bit longer, if they'd have had a little bit more time,
yeah,
they could have probably pulled that one out. But UConn was early in the season. Now we've got that, what, in November? I mean, people don't realize that scheduling, something we'll talk about in a minute, but scheduling is not our friend this year from the American, don't you think? I mean, I know that sounds like a terrible fan, but scheduling is not.
It depends on how you want to look at it. So you remember November. If we have 3 or 4 wins by the time November rolls around, we certainly have the opportunity with Tulane. Well, I think Tulane's going to be good, but with Tulane, UConn, and Cincinnati in November, if we have 3 or 4 wins by the time we roll in there, there's the opportunity there to get a bowl. You would like for it to be a little more evenly structured, I guess, maybe, where you play UConn in October. You play UCF in November, you play Cincinnati in October, you play South Florida in November, you know, spread it out instead of it being so top-loaded September and October with league play. But I guess it's not all negative to have those games in November if we're in position to try to play for a bowl. If we lose early and we're coming in November with 0 to 2 wins, something like that, then it's really not going to matter.
So in other words, it gives you – what you're saying is by having those games late, it gives you hope.
Gives you hope if we have wins, if we have 3 or 4 wins going into November, yeah. But if we're sitting there with 0 to 3 wins, or excuse me, I guess 3 would be okay. If we're sitting there with, you know, 0 to 2 wins, then like I said, it's not going to matter.
And, you know, another thing is if you think about it, if there was some way that you could sneak up on one of those teams, one or two of those teams in October, right now you pretty much have to run the table just about in November to have a chance, right, just to go bowling, just to be bowl eligible with 6 wins.
If we do what we are supposed to do in September,
Right.
And then beat somebody else along the way, yeah.
What do you think, Bubba? Do you think that can we win? Do you feel confident that we could win three games in September?
I think we could. I think if we're going to get the three, obviously A&T and ODU, but I think that third one would either be North Carolina at home or at USF. They obviously lost Quentin Flowers at quarterback and then had some other key losses as well. So I think that's the one that would have to be the upset. One of those two games, I really don't see a upset at Lane Stadium against Justin Fuente and the Hokies the way they're playing and the way they dominated us last year, putting up 50 unanswered.
What about Houston coming to Greenville? We were able to score on them last year and put up some big numbers in terms of yards, but we couldn't stop them. They do come to Greenville. That's a long way from Houston to Greenville. Maybe we get them at a 12 o'clock kickoff. I think that potentially, if we're improved, if we are decent, I think that's a game that could potentially be an upset.
We know, if you think about it, too, another thing that I wanted to mention is that with the defense is that had David Blackwell been hired maybe year one or year two, we may be in a position where the defense would be, and I'm trying to take up for them, so I'm not being negative, but when you're looking at 130th or 128th, it was right at dead last. Even if he goes like Kyle was talking about earlier, I think that it's a good possibility they could be like you were saying, Kyle, in the 90s as far as the total defense, but yet that's still not going to be – I mean, that may not be good enough to get you to stop the teams enough to score enough. I mean, how many points are we going to have to score is my question to you guys to put a lot of pressure on the offense to win games.
I guess it depends on how improved the defense is. I would, if the defense is ranked, you know, let's be really optimistic and say our defense improves to number 85 in the country. Then with the schedule we have, I think we got to have a top 30 scoring offense. Because our offense has put up yards under Montgomery and Peterson, but not points. We're going to have a top 30 scoring offense, even if the defense improved like the 85, I would think, to get the bowl eligibility. Wouldn't you think, Bubba?
I'd say you're probably dead on with that, but I don't know the numbers as far as exactly where it would rank in the from 1 to 130, but I'd say just looking at it from a points per game standpoint, I'd say we have to get it down into about the 4-touchdown, 28-point range because putting up much more than that with such an unproven offense from a running game standpoint and more than that quarterback standpoint is going to be an awful lot to ask. And the biggest thing defensively is just last year we gave up so many big plays. You think the first game alone we gave up three touchdown runs of 70 plus yards. I think 85, 80, and 70.
That's ridiculous.
And all three of those were in the second half. And then I think over the course of last season, it was just mind-boggling, the big plays, all those explosion plays that we were allowing. So if we can just bend and then break some, but just don't break and give up those big plays, make teams earn what they get and drive the field where they have a chance to turn the ball over or jump off sides, false starts and holdings and all that stuff that can happen when you're snapping the football more. That's where we have to get this year on defense.
I remember when Rick Smith was saying, speaking of our team, you know, he was talking about the fundamentals of football, and he said, guys, if you can't run the ball and you can't stop the run, I mean, that's how many wins can you have? He was talking about that many times on listen to the guys on the fifth quarter with Troy and AT and all those guys and Cliff and Terrence Copper. You listen to him on Thursdays on Pirate Radio and Live at 5. I mean, he was talking about that. It's true. I mean, if you can't stop the run and if you can't stop the run and you can't run the ball, I mean, how successful are you going to be on the football field?
Generally not very.
And again, it's not I think all three of the guys on this podcast, which is including myself, I mean, how many of us want the Pirates to lose? I mean, there's nobody that wants to be – it would be nice to have a dream season, wouldn't it? I mean, to go undefeated.
Yeah,
but at the same time, we want people to listen to this podcast, and I don't want people to say those guys are homers or a bunch of clowns because they're saying – that we're going undefeated. Now, there's some seasons where in the past that we had a shot at it, right? I mean, where we could have had a magical season like we did way back in 91 with the Peach Bowl. And you had more, and look at the 2013 season. But if you look at realistically this year, it would take, I mean, we could, I don't know if you could write a Hollywood script to put a miracle season coming into what we know as of right now. And true, is it possible that could happen? Sure, it's possible that could happen. But is it probable? I would say it's probably not probable.
David, I would say 8 wins would be a miracle season this year.
That's true. Now,
8-4. If we got 8-4, it would feel like the Peach Bowl year to me this year.
It would be certainly it would certainly be the turnaround that folks are looking for year 3 under Montgomery, right?
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, like Kyle said, if we go 8-4, then Scotty Montgomery is American Athletic Conference Coach of the Year. I mean, barring UCF going undefeated again or something, and even if that happens, I think Scotty would probably get it. But yeah, I mean, even if we're a 6 or 7 win team this year, I think Scotty would potentially be in the running for that. But depending on what else happens across the conference, of course. But yeah, no doubt about it.
Speaking of which, we just talked about the Vegas odds for wins for the Pirates. You guys saw this, and so I want to give you both credit about the odds as far as winning the American. Kyle and Bubba, I don't know who wants to take it, but what do you think? What did you see, and what do you think?
Well, the thing that was most shocking to me is not that we were 500-1. I mean, that's shocking. 500-1. Oh, good God. But the next team up to us was UConn, and they were 300-1. We were 500-1. Connecticut was 300-1.
A basketball school.
Yeah, we're not being negative. We're not being negative. When I'm saying I think we're going to be bad, I'm not being negative. That's what Vegas thinks, too. Vegas thinks we're going to be bad 200 times more than they think Connecticut's going to be bad. Think about that. That's unbelievable. Yeah. And that's intangible, because when you look on paper, UConn is more inexperienced than we are. Connecticut, this is an extremely inexperienced football team. They are rebuilding. It's a rebuilding year for Connecticut, and they were bad. Because when you look at talent and experience, UConn should not be good. Yeah, they're 300-1 odds, and we're 500-1 odds. That just shocked me.
In fact, I haven't had a chance. You guys may have more. I've got to look at the magazines more. But speaking of the preseason magazines, it looks like to me right now that they're having, most of the magazines have us just above Connecticut in the East, right, for the American, my memory serves me right?
Phil still does. I believe Athlon has a 6th.
I'm going to say, I have Phil Steele's magazine, and like Kyle said, he does have his 5th, and with UConn last, I believe. So, but yeah, that was, like, getting back to the last topic as far as those odds that Vegas put out, that was the thing that boggled my mind. Did it surprise me that we were in the bottom 2 or 3 as far as those odds? No, I would fully have expected us to be. But just the discrepancy between us and UConn, that blew my mind, because I knew a lot of people were projecting us to finish ahead of UConn. But and then obviously we had beaten UConn twice under Scotty Montgomery, but that's obviously saying what the odds makers feel as far as the improvement that program is going to make at UConn under Randy Edsall and
on scheduling. So when I throw that out to you, future schedules, your fantasy schedule, what do you think?
My theory in scheduling is 2-2-1-1, meaning play 2 Power Fives, 1 Group of 5, and 1 FCS every year. I think that's your path to a New Year's Six Bowl. I think you need to play 2. You can get away with 1, but you're better off playing 2 Power 5 opponents. But they don't need to be, you know, I think of this new system, playing a West Virginia or even a Virginia Tech regularly probably isn't the best idea. NC State, UNC, Wake Forest, Indiana, Purdue, Minnesota, schools like that is who I would love to see us schedule home and home. Power 5 opponents that are very beatable, but still give you that rub of beating a Power 5. And you obviously want to schedule regionally and play your in-state opponents like North Carolina, NC State, et cetera. Then Group of 5, I would play regional, which is what we're doing. I actually like the Appalachian State games and the Georgia State games and the Marshall games. I actually have no problem with that, even though I did not like Jeff Confer. I had no problem with that philosophy. And then I would play, I don't know a lot of Pirate fans hate this, but I would keep playing an FCS every year. But I am of the ilk of, if you're going to play an FCS, you do not gain anything by beating any FCS. So I don't think you should play any FCS team that realistically can beat you, like a James Madison. I would play Gardner-Webb. I would play Western Carolina. Campbell's full FCS now. I would open up with a mid to low tier FCS team every year, play a good regional Group of Five team, or you could span out and play. If you want to play a Mountain West team as your Group of Five opponent, that's fine. And then I would play two Power Five opponents that should be beatable, be it an ACC opponent like North Carolina or North Carolina State, or if we could, you know, get a Rutgers or an Indiana or a Purdue, somebody like that on the schedule home and home.
Yeah, I know that with Kyle and I, you and I are closer than what I thought when we first talked. I think that I have no problems with the FCS. I would like every once in a while to, your favorite athletic director, Jeff Confer, used to call it a marquee game with the two Power Fives. To me, a marquee game would be if every once in a while you throw in at a really big opponent, like an Alabama, Clemson, every once in a while. Notice I didn't say every year. I think that's totally ridiculous. But every few years, throw in a – you remember when, Kyle, you and I both love talking about the days of one of the teams that I want to bring back on the schedule big time is home and home with Southern Miss. I know they're Conference USA, but I really miss having them on the schedule.
That's another Group of Five I should have mentioned. Yeah, Southern Miss, absolutely love Southern Miss. Have some good friends down in Hattiesburg. Would love to play Southern Miss again, just for nostalgia's sake, just because it is a rivalry. And I disagree with you about the Alabama stuff, the Clemson. I think if you're going to play Alabama or Clemson, you do it. You do it when you play my schedule with the right coach because you made a New Year's Day ball game. That's when you play Alabama or Clemson, in my opinion, because I don't think you can – I guess you can make the argument that if you lost that one game, it wouldn't matter. You'd still make the New Year's Six Bowl. I guess you could make that argument, but it's just not my philosophy. Plus, Alabama or Clemson ain't coming here, so you'd be signing a one and done, and I don't like doing that. Bubba, what's your thoughts on scheduling?
My thoughts, I'm of the 2-1-1 mindset as you. Not that you have to have that FCS game every year, but if you didn't have the FCS game, maybe a second game like a Marshall and a Southern Miss instead of a Gardner-Webb or Campbell, Elon, whoever from the FCS level. And then I think you need those two Power Five matchups, be it one of North Carolina or NC State, and then a Virginia Tech or South Carolina. I certainly don't think they'll ever be making the trip to Greenville like they're scheduled to. I think it's in 2020 or 2021, but I definitely think they'll end up buying that game out for sure. But yeah, I'm of that mindset. I do have to give Comp for credit for the deals that he continued on with, with BYU. I really love that series, the intersectional matchup. Of course, we went out there in 2015, and then last year we beat them in Greenville. And then I do like the series that he added. Of course, the only time we had played Boise State had been in the Hawaii Bowl when we beat them on the last second field goal by Ben Hartman. But getting with those guys is something I had wanted to see for a long time, because obviously there was that time not so many years ago where we were two of the top G5 program. So that's an interesting match. Was any type of dream matchups? I know back when Terry Holland was AD, there was a rumor that Oklahoma was going to come to Greenville. Something like that would obviously be a dream situation, whether it's Oklahoma, Tennessee. But obviously you guys know, like I do, that it's probably not going to happen. But I do think that something like Illinois, I know North Carolina has had a home and home with Illinois, whether it's Illinois, Indiana, Purdue, Rutgers, Maryland, I think we should try to schedule some games with teams like that. We had the home and home, or not a home and home, but we had a game at Illinois back in 95. But I'd like to get a home and home with those guys, some of those teams from P5 leagues that may not necessarily have the best teams right now, and should make for some competitive games and hopefully win to the Pirates.
I agree 100%. With the Illinois-type schedule, and I'd love to see that. I'll tell you another team. It's a group of five team, but a brand name group of five team, like a Boise at a BYU, that I think we should look at scheduling, because I think they'd be interested in playing us home and home. Colorado State, they recruit this area, the Carolinas and Georgia, a lot under their current head coach because he was an SEC guy for so long. So that's another team that we should maybe look at scheduling home and home would be Colorado State. I think there would be some mutual interest.
I definitely agree with that. And of course, they're coached by Mike Bobo, like you said, who has those SEC roots at Georgia and quarterback the Bulldogs. And that one, if they have, if they're recruiting in this area, that would be a game that would make sense. And it's one that I would like to see, because obviously the Mountain West is, next best league outside of the American in the group of five.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there's a lot of – and, guys, there's a lot of Sun Belt teams, and there's a lot of – there's a lot of – when the Sun Belt – speaking of the Sun Belt, you know, when you have Sun Belt teams and you've got the Conference USA teams, I have no problems whatsoever playing those guys. I really don't.
I don't either.
I think that there's the worry that I have is not – I think there has to be a balance. You can't have, you know, some FCS and then you barely have a group of five like some guys want, and then you can't have – I mean, obviously you can't have Murderers Row, especially we do have a good conference. But I think that the biggest thing is you have to worry about – if you're going to build a program, you got to start kind of like what we're doing. But at the same time, like Kyle said earlier, it used to be the North Carolina A&T, no disrespect to them, but that would be a game, a good warm-up game that we could get out there and we could win, and it would be a, you know, a great way to start the season. And they're a great in-state rival. They've got a tremendous love their band. There's a lot of great, you know, you would get a lot of fans that would come. It makes perfect sense. And now we're talking about, hey, they won the Celebration Bowl last year, going 14-0. They go undefeated, and they may have a shot to beat us this year. I mean, it's amazing how the program should be saying, like Kyle was saying, that that's a game that we should win, and that win convincingly. But now we're worried about, can we pull off a win? We should win it, but is there a chance they could do like James Madison, the season opener, and we could lose that game?
It's possible, and it's sad to say that our program, it wouldn't matter. We would look at them as a good FCS opponent, a good tune-up game, but that's exactly what it would be a tune-up game. They would score some points on us, but we would end up pulling away and winning by three or four touchdowns. And I don't care what they did last year. They are not James Madison. They do not have nowhere near the talent James Madison did. But they do win. And let me tell you something, winning breeds winning. And they went undefeated last year. And they've beat an FBS opponent in the last 2 years. Now, granted, it was Charlotte last year, and the year before that it was Kent State. But nonetheless, they've beaten an FBS opponent the last 2 years. And like I said, winning breeds winning. They don't know what losing is. They went undefeated last year. So, and they get the advantage of opening up a week before we do, taking on Jacksonville State of all teams, where our defense coordinator came from. So they're going to see a very similar defense playing in the FCS kickoff game.
a week before they play us.
I mean, interesting. And then you were talking about the Tar Heels. Sure, I'm going to ask you guys before we've got all we can ask a million questions, and we'll have to do this next week for sure. What do you think? We'll start off with Bubba this time. We're going to we'll talk next week about the AD search and what we're hearing, and maybe go into more depth. What do you if we could make you AD, what would you do? What would you change? Is there one or two things that come to mind? I'll give you a couple minutes, and then a couple minutes with Kyle, and we've got to talk about the party as well, for nostalgia party.
Joe Dooley, since he's been hired, and Scotty Montgomery have made it very clear what a pressing need the training table is, and I know there's some things being done right now to get that close to where we need it to be, but. And that would be one of my priorities for sure, to make sure that training table is as good as it can be for the time being, and then also have a long-term plan and hopefully eventually a facility that will accommodate that kind of thing. And then next, the indoor practice facility, because I'm pretty much about the only program in the state, us in Charlotte, I guess, that don't have an indoor practice facility. So that's a very pressing need, and the reason it's so important is because that's what, when you have the lightning delays during practice, that's what you have, 30-minute delay for each strike, obviously, so that can prolong practice, and then it's just a focus thing, and also a space thing. Having to go into Minji's is just not, it's just not cutting it.
What do you think, Kyle? Do you what would you do as AD? Was there a couple things that come to mind?
If I was named athletic director tomorrow, first of all, you got to address needs. So it's like Bubba said, the training table, which, again, you know, the last time you brought this up to me, I lost my mind. The training table shouldn't be discussed. We should have a training table. I mean, it's ridiculous. We're in the American Athletic Conference. The training table is something we should have. That I'm athletic director now. So I'm going to get that training table done, first and foremost. It's going to be done. Like Bubba said, we're going to come up with something that's going to work for this season, that's going to please the coaching staff and the players, and we will not have that as an excuse. So we're going to get that training table done, and then we'll come up with a permanent solution. The indoor practice facility needs to be addressed. It should have been addressed with the current expansion, with the huge $60 million expansion we're doing right now, building an elaborate press box with tweets that none of us can afford to sit in. It should have been handled with part of that and spent a little less money on making this gaudy press box. You know, just spend a little less on that and build an indoor practice facility. So, that will benefit the players more than anything, certainly more than a press box. That would be my goal, to get an indoor practice facility to benefit the student athletes.
And another thing I'd add is you got to have an athletic director, and we'll talk about kind of like a nice cereal. And I don't mean like a cereal you eat, like a soap opera, a cliffhanger, if you will. We'll talk about that next week in depth. Finally, guys, want to talk about, we're running out of time. I want to talk about the nostalgia party. Awesome job by Bubba. I call him the player coach coordinator. A tremendous job. I'm telling you, folks, it's going to be tremendous. July 21st at Professor O'Cool's, 7 until maybe 9 or 10. We've got so many players, so little time, and we've got lots of great people coming on and former coaches, and we've got a lot of great stuff. Right, guys?
Absolutely. Bubba, you take that.
Yeah, I was going to say, no doubt about it. I appreciate the kind words, Dave. It's definitely been a labor of love for me. It's something I've enjoyed doing for sure, and I can't wait to hear the interviews that you've conducted with these guys after I've lined them up. Mark Libiano, Jeff Carr, two excellent linebackers from the 1990s, when we've got interviews with those guys and so many more. We've, as of right now, recorded 30 interviews, and we'll have other guys live on the phone that night at Professor O'Cool's, and then some are going to be there on site to do interviews with us. So it's going to be an awfully special night, and I can't wait for it. And it's getting here very quickly, for sure, when there's so much to do.
Guys, I'm telling you, folks, you need to come out early, because there are going to be people. I really think that there's a lot of people. I'm hearing a lot of positive things in the community, and I want to give our friend Stephen Igo from Hoist the Colors, thanks to him. He's been nice enough to let us promote it there. We're promoting on social media. Going to give a shout-out to John Bream, who listens to this podcast. He's actually promoted it on Right the Ship. We've had a lot of different people helping us promote it, and it's going to be a special night. Let me say that from between myself, Bubba, and Kyle, it's money coming out of our pocket. We're not getting anything out of this. As a matter of fact, we're doing this for the players. It's been a couple seasons where we've had it tough with the athletics department, and I'll just say it. I'll say it again that night at the show, but we're doing it. I came up with the idea, and I passed along to Kyle and then Bubba. Let's do something special with our players and you guys. I have to give you my hats off to Kyle and to Bubba. You both have been tremendous behind the scenes, and I'm really tickled to have you guys a part of the podcast. And I can talk to you guys for hours, but we're going to save some more for next week. We've got a lot of cool stuff headed your way in the future. We'll be talking about that. I don't want to give stuff away just yet, but I promise you, you're going to be excited about the stuff that we're doing. Kyle, do you have any final thoughts before we go?
I just wanted to ask you if the rumors were true that Sandra Bullock was going to be there.
I would like to say that's true, but I will go ahead and say that's not true. She's, I know, working in Hollywood. She does come back to Greenville from time to time. I will tell you guys later we'll have another discussion. And maybe, you never know, maybe we could get her on the podcast. You never know. I may know some people that know her. I will say that. But the chances are that she's coming on the podcast right now is zero. She's not going to be at the nostalgia party. That would be nice.
False rumors.
Yes, that's true. What do you think, Bubba? Any final thoughts?
And just to expand on what you were saying, David, and that's what, as far as why we're doing this, it's all about the players and the coaches, support staff, guys like that a lot of people don't think about, and guys like Joey Perry that makes the field and Dowdy Ficklin look great every single Saturday, and such a beautiful venue for college football. Guys like Chuck Young with Sports Work Ministries, team minister. Guys like that that often go unnoticed that are a big part of the machine that is Pirate football, and we want to recognize all those guys and just give them their due respect and thank them for everything, all the great moments they've created for us through the years. I'm just looking so much forward to the 21st at Professor O'Cool's, 7 p.m. Everybody come on out.
It's going to be tremendous, guys. You're awesome. I appreciate you very much. I appreciate everybody listening. And we've got so much to talk about. We'll try to do more podcasts. Maybe we can do a couple week now because there's so much to talk about. We didn't even get to a third of the stuff we're going to talk about tonight, but that's the way that it goes. And Bubba, you have added a lot of not only content, but the time behind the scenes, and that's showing up tonight. Right, Kyle?
Absolutely.
It's been great. All right, for Kyle Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond. You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.